State lawmakers say they have reached a deal to expand private school vouchers statewide. And we'll lead off this edition of the Week in Review with that news and cover all the other big state budget developments as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, May 31st. Every Friday at this time, we invite two guests from different political viewpoints to comment on the top political news stories of the week, from Wisconsin to Washington, D.C. to around the world. What news would you like to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Today we have with us John Smart, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party and a regular contributor to Fighting Bob and newspapers around Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How is everything with you?
Everything's going great. Thanks for joining us. Let me also welcome Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau and a member of the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. And he joins us from our studios in Wausau. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Walter John. Nice to hear from you.
Same here.
Let's start with the story we heard in state news. We have a new deal, according to lawmakers. They have reached a deal, lawmakers, to expand private school vouchers statewide. Your reaction, John Smart. You're a former school board member too. What do you think of this?
I don't like it, but that's not surprising. I don't like the idea of school vouchers to begin with at all. I think that using taxpayer funds to pay private school tuitions, it should be considered unconstitutional, and I disagree with the courts that have ruled otherwise. And I'm not at all in favor of expanding them, because what's happening is they're expanding the voucher program and cutting the official aid to Wisconsin's public schools in the process. And I just think that that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking for the details. I thought that there was going to be an increase in per pupil spending along with this deal. There are other contingencies. There would be an enrollment cap of 500 students. I think there would be an income gap. It should be limited only to the poorer students. Walter John Chilson, your thoughts about expanding private school vouchers statewide?
Well, first, I think you're right that there is an increase of $150 per student spending. It costs the state about $289 million, and Democrats have been pushing for an increase of $275 per student. That would be, of course, better for taxpayers of the state at the local level, because that would mean property taxes could go down. But I think there's the reason there's an expansion effort going on is because there's a demand for it, and it seems to be. I know there have been not without problems, but it is an effort to put pressure on the public schools, I think, to improve themselves and set up a little competition.
Yeah. Is this going to improve the public schools, John Smart?
I don't see that it can. I think that what's happening, no matter. And I know, Walter John, I know that this latest proposal is for $150 per student increase in the federal or the state funding for public schools, but I don't think that's sufficient. And I think that again, by taking money away, and they're talking about poor performing schools, that they're going to expand vouchers. Does anybody really think that that's going to help the poor performing schools by taking money away from them and giving it to a private school? Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Walter John, how's that going to work?
Well, I think we'll have to see how it works in the future. And we'll have to see whether the deal that has been announced actually goes through the budget. The fact that the governor supports it, of course, and Senator Luther Olson is the chairman of the Senate Education Committee, he's indicated that he is shaking hands with the governor on the deal, so that's a good sign that it is going to go through. But well, I think we'll just learn by experience and see if it needs further adjusting as we go ahead. I know the chairman, or excuse me, the head of the state school system is opposed. He's afraid that it's a just going to get the Campbell's nose under the tent, and pretty soon it's going to keep expanding and hurt the public school system even more.
Yeah. This latest deal apparently removes Governor Walker's proposal to have vouchers for special needs students, that would have to be introduced as a separate bill later. Is that good news, John Smart?
No, not really. And because the problem with this has been from the beginning that the private schools don't want to deal with special needs students. And the special needs students in Milwaukee have ended up going to the public schools, and the private schools that are on voucher program have been able to not take those students. And I just think that's crazy. And I would echo what Walter John said about Superintendent Tony Evers. We're lucky we've got him, for one thing. And I think that his take on this is exactly right, that it's the camel's nose under the tent. Because once they get started pushing this voucher program further, it's going to continue. And I just think, as I said, the voucher program is basically designed to do this destructive work to our public school system.
You have a comment on that, Walter John?
Well, when I was in the legislature, I was an advocate for the special needs students. It was really elementary then, because special needs students were shuffled off in the public school system, even into a room next to the furnace room. And so I was an advocate of them getting better treatment, and I still think it needs to be better treatment and more funding for that purpose.
Let me take a call from Elizabeth and Nina. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning. You guys were just touching on the issue that I called in about. I'm the mother of a son with autism who has gone through the public schools, and I'm concerned about a voucher system really alienating children with special needs. Obviously, my particular interest is autism. Educating children with autism requires highly scientific and very expensive education, and if a voucher, an expansion of the voucher program is only open to people with who are low income, you'll find that there are many middle income and even high income parents of children with autism who cannot afford the kind of education that their children will need, and now their children will be relegated to schools that have actually less resources than they have even right now.
Yeah, that's your point, John Smart?
Exactly. That's my point exactly. And I think that it's been proven in Milwaukee and Racine already, as I said, that special needs children are shunted off to the public schools because the private schools don't want to deal with them or have no capacity to deal with them. And the public schools are having their budgets cut, and it just doesn't make sense.
Walter John?
Well, I just want to reiterate that I disagree with cutting any spending for special needs students.
Well, another detail of the agreement does deal with enrollment caps. Walker's plan capped enrollment at 500 in the first year, 1,000 in the second year, and then no cap after that. Under this new deal, the 1,000 cap stays in place. I'm wondering, I think, Walter John Chilson, you said that this was the camel's nose under the tent. It's not going to be long before we have statewide, unlimited voucher schools in Wisconsin?
Well, it would be up to the legislature, and if Democrats can take control of even one house, then that kind of expansion would be blocked, of course. I don't fear that it's going to be growing that rapidly and statewide. It has to prove itself first before that'll be the case.
John Smart?
I agree with Walter John. I frankly don't think it's going to happen, because I think there's already there's already a movement in the Republican members of the legislature to not support this program.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau, and John Smart, a past chair of the Price County Democratic Party, talking about some of the latest state budget developments. We've spent the first part of the program talking about this deal that was reached to expand private school vouchers statewide. We'll talk about some other issues as we move along. What happened in the news this week that you want to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 4 this afternoon, it's your views on the news. You can call in and talk about the news story that mattered most to you this week. Cynthia Schuster in during At Issue and your views on the news after 4 o'clock. And remember that every Monday at 7 o'clock, we bring you the State Capitol Report. We will talk with Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, Sean Johnson, about all the latest news coming out from the state legislature and the Joint Finance Committee coming up Monday between 7 and 7:30. Right now, we are reviewing the top news stories of the week with John Smart and Walter John Chilson, and we welcome your input. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, a state appeals court yesterday ruled that the state's voter ID law is, in fact, constitutional. It overturned the ruling of a Dane County Circuit Court judge. However, the law is still frozen, not in effect, due to another lawsuit and a couple of federal lawsuits. Walter John Chilson, do you think that voters should have to show a photo ID to vote in Wisconsin?
Well, I come to be ambivalent on that issue. I've said before on this program several months ago that I thought the voter ID law was a solution looking for a problem. I don't think that there's that much illegal voting going on. It does appear that some of the criticism of it is that it's an effort to depress the voting of lower income people, probably. Of those who might be tending to vote Democrat. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. But I don't think it's unreasonable to ask voters to get a photo ID. Some have objected, and I understand a Republican lawmaker has a sweeping bill. He calls it a sweeping bill to negate legal concerns about the voters showing photo identification at the polls. Jeff Stone is the Republican legislator, and he would make a lot of changes to the Wisconsin election law, and mainly it would allow voters to opt out of the requirements if they merely tell a poll officials that they're poor, they can't afford to get an ID without paying. They can't afford to pay for it, or if they have a religious objection to being photographed, or they can't get the documentation needed to obtain an ID. Well, it seems to me that those are mighty big, wide open loopholes for anyone to use, and I don't see that if they give that objection at the polls, I don't see any way that the poll worker can challenge it. So makes any objection to the law, I think, non-existent.
Well, we did have Representative Stone on this program on Wednesday talking about his new bill to overhaul election laws, including this new voter ID bill. What about that, John Smart? He's saying if you just sign a statement saying that you were unable to obtain a photo ID, that you could vote. Do those exemptions put your mind at ease at all about this?
No. quite simply, no. And I agree with Walter John that this is a solution looking for a problem. And I think that by the time they get to the point where, like Jeff Stone's bill, would allow so many objections to this, that if anybody comes in and says, I'm sorry, but I don't like to be photographed, or I'm sorry, but I can't find the proper identification, my birth certificate, or whatever, you can come up with some kind of an excuse. Well, that kind of negates the whole point of it. And again, I think it's a solution looking for a problem. I don't think we have a terrible problem with that. And I think that anything that's put in the way of people exercising their right to vote, I think is a bad idea. The more people we can turn out, the better. And I also agree with Walter John in the sense that these distractions that are being put in are aimed at a particular group of people, generally the poor, generally the minority groups, generally students and things like that, people who don't have the necessary identification. And I just think that it's transparently unfair, and I think that it needs to be abolished.
Yeah, but your reaction, John Smart, to the appeals court yesterday saying that voter ID in Wisconsin is constitutional.
Well, there are several other cases, as you pointed out, Joy, that are still before various courts, and I just have a feeling that it's not going to happen, at least not in the foreseeable future, at least not while this Republican majority has control of the legislature. I think that it's going to be held off, and I'm just on the very basis that it's just not a fair thing. It really isn't. And as I said, there are a number of cases that are playing around in the courts, and I think it's going to be dragged out for a while yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Walter John Chilson, that one day, someday, voter ID will be the law of Wisconsin?
I'm not sure about that. I think there remain constitutional problems, and legal challenges can drag it out for an awfully long time, and they might finally decide it's just not worth the effort.
Well, let's see what listeners think. Do you have a comment on the voter ID issue in Wisconsin, a new bill being introduced, a court ruling that it is constitutional? How about the new expanded school voucher program? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or did anything else happen at the state capitol in terms of various budget developments this week that you would like to talk about, or things happening in Washington, D.C.? You let us know what happened in the news this week that you would like our guest to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. There were some other changes being proposed in Representative Stone's sweeping election law overhaul. One of the provisions would give the governor more say in choosing members of the Government Accountability Board. It would limit the time for in-person absentee voting and also make some changes with the campaign finance law. So aside from the voter ID, John Smart, what do you make of the rest of those changes?
I think that it's, again, it's a solution looking for a problem. And the idea of reducing the time available for voting or registration is clearly, again, aimed at those same people that I was talking about before, minority groups and students and the elderly and so forth. As an elderly myself, I know that it's not always easy to get down there to re-register or to do whatever. And to cut the time available just makes it even more so.
You know, Jeff Stone was saying that one of the reasons he's doing this, a shortening of the in-person absentee voting, was in part because he said big cities were able to do this, you know, longer hours and on weekends, and they had more resources than smaller rural communities. And so Walter John Chilson, he thought it was fair to even the playing field this way. What do you say to that?
I'm really not very familiar with the changes that he's suggesting in that regard. I guess I can't comment on it.
All right. Well, let's go to Robert in Rice Lake. Hello, Robert.
Hi. I'd just like to voice my opinion on the voter ID. I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for photo ID And the way I look at it is, voting is a privilege. It's not something that you are required to do by law. So anybody that wants to vote, what's the harm in them getting a photo ID? Most people have driver's licenses, or they get a ID card if they don't have a driver's license for check cashing privileges, et cetera. So, you know, it's a privilege. It's not a required thing that people do.
It's a right, isn't it, Robert?
Yes. Voting is a right. It's a privilege. There's no law saying everybody has to vote.
Well, what do you say to that, John Smart?
I think he's confusing words here. If something is a privilege, then it's not necessarily a right. And if it's a right, it's not necessarily a privilege. I think that those terms are should not be bandied around together. And I think that voting, unlike cashing a check or any of the other things that the caller mentioned, I think voting is a right. It's something that is every citizen of the United States has a right to do. And to put things in the path blocking the right to vote, I think, is bad. That's all.
Dave in Wisconsin Rapids is with us. Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning to your guests. This whole voting thing kind of amazes me. It seems like such a fraud. The real voter fraud has to do with what Republicans all over the country are doing to put up roadblocks for people voting. There's never been any voter fraud in the state of Wisconsin worth a hill of beans. They can't find any. Do a few people vote who shouldn't? Sure, perhaps they do. But to put everyone in the state, to have them jump through this hoop. In Pennsylvania, the voter fraud law would require people who are on the Voter Hall of Fame, some of them who have a record of voting for over 50 years, to go get some identification. That's just plain nuts.
Thank you very much, Dave. Walter John Chilson, I know you've said that this the voter ID bill is an answer looking for a problem, but are Republicans doing this because they do want to suppress the vote of the elderly, minorities, the poor, because those voters generally vote Democratic?
Well, I don't know. I don't think any Republicans ever come out and said that's the goal, that's the reason, but I can't argue very much with the fact that that appears to be the case, that in Wisconsin, gentleman from Wisconsin Rapids is right. I don't think we've ever found any egregious illegal voting going on that would, of course, one vote can change an election sometimes, but it seems that the main goal would be to suppress voting. And I say I've grown ambivalent on it. I agree with the other caller that it's not unreasonable to ask people to get an ID and show an ID. By the way, I think I've read that your congressman from the Madison area is proposing a constitutional amendment, which would indeed assure that it is a voting is a right and not just a privilege. I think it leans more to a privilege right now than a right. I think we emotionally feel that it's a right, but it's not written into the Constitution.
Yeah, we did have Congressman Mark Pocan on the show last week talking about his right to vote constitutional amendment. You want to react to that, John Smart?
Well, I certainly agree with Congressman Pocan on that as well. And I also I listened to his broadcast with you, and I agree with him completely. I'd also like to bring up right now the fact that the Republican Party has changed enormously. And the kind of things that are happening now, I don't think would have happened when Walter John was in the state Senate or the number of other people. I love to tell people that I lived in New York during the 60s in New York City, and I voted a straight Republican ticket. Nelson Rockefeller was the governor. Jake Javits and Ken Keating were our senators. John Lindsay was first my congressman and then later the mayor of the city of New York, and they were all Republicans. But those kind of people wouldn't be allowed anymore, I'm afraid, and that's a sad commentary.
Let me ask Walter John Chilson to respond to that. I was going to get to it later, but what do you think about what former U.S. Senator Bob Dole said on Fox News on Sunday, that the GOP should be closed for repairs, thinking it's been too radical and too attack-driven, and said that even Ronald Reagan might not be able to make it today in today's Republican Party?
Well, I think I've always admired Bob Dole, and he's often outspoken, and I can't disagree with what he's saying in this regard right now. Bob Dole is admirable, I think, in his views, certainly experience. He served in the Congress and the Senate for, 35 years, I believe. He represented Kansas in the U.S. House and then the Senate. I think he and I feel the same. I think I kind of pride myself in being a Rhino means Republican in name only, but it also meant that you were willing to make compromises and work with Democrats in order to get something done. And I'm afraid now that what's going on in Madison and what's going on at the national level is just continuous efforts to try to not get any solution and try to blame the other side for the fact that you're not trying to reach agreements. That's really unfortunate, and I think that's what Bob Dole is driving at. He said that he wasn't a critic of the president, but what is it? I think one mistake he made was not getting together with more with Congress earlier on. I think that's a valid criticism of President Obama, that he has not tried hard enough to compromise. But there's plenty of blame to go around to the Republican Party as well.
Mm-hmm. You want to get in on that one, John Smart?
Well, I would just only disagree in the sense that I think, and my take on it is that President Obama, from the beginning, was trying very hard to compromise. He was trying very hard to bring the Republicans into the discussion and so forth. And in fact, he angered many Democrats because it seemed like he was trying too hard, that he was spending too much time trying to court the Republican votes. And he seems to be kind of getting his steel in his spine lately. And I suppose he figures that he's been reelected and now he can do things like the health care bill and a number of other things, and he can push for things that the opposition might be against. But I agree with what Walter John said primarily, and Bob Dole too, for that matter, that the Republican Party is veering off to the right. And if anybody listened to that recent not a press conference, but an appearance by Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, it's scary. I think it's kind of scary what those people are up to.
Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann announced this week that she won't be seeking another term in office. She was greatly admired by the Tea Party. I'm wondering, Walter John, do you think her not running again says that the Tea Party power is waning?
Well, I think without her being the spokesperson very often for the Tea Party, that's certainly an indication they'll be losing an outspoken supporter. But I think a lot of Republicans are quite relieved because Michelle Bachmann is noted for shooting from the hip very often, and she throws a lot of stuff at the wall, and some of the stuff sticks and some of it doesn't. And that seems to be her goal. If she gets 1 out of 10, she's pretty happy. But I'm not really disappointed to see that Michelle is not running again. And it may be that she's got some harassment going on about when she was running for president, that some of the campaign funding was used improperly. Now, whether she's at fault about that or not remains to be seen. I know from running campaigns, you don't know what's going on in the fundraising effort. As a matter of fact, I tried to assiduously avoid knowing where the campaign contributions were coming from because I didn't want to be obligated by them.
Your reaction, John Smart, to Michelle Bachmann's announcement this week?
what I thought was funny about it was that she said it had nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that she was afraid of running for re-election, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with that campaign mess that that Walter John just brought up. And I think she just basically, the last time she ran, last year, she won by a very, very slim margin. And I think she could see the handwriting on the wall that she was not going to succeed in another run. And so I think she just basically jumped off the ship. And I don't blame her, and I'm glad that she's going to be gone.
Yeah. This, again, was something I was going to bring up later, but let's just ask about it now. President Obama is prepared to nominate former Bush administration official James Corney as FBI. Did I read that right? I think I need bifocals. As FBI director. Your reaction, John Smart, to that?
I think it sounds like a very interesting nomination. James Comey is had some kind of dust-up during the early Bush years when he was acting attorney general, when then-attorney general was in the hospital for an operation. And there was a very interesting kind of a dust-up between him and some members of the administration, Alberto Gonzalez, for instance. And I think that it's an interesting point because he's nominally a Republican and chosen for the FBI post, and but the Republicans are going to have some problem, too, because he was, as I said, there was this dust-up going on back during the Bush years. So it's an interesting nomination, I think. It'll be curious to hear what the hearings are like.
Comey, okay, yes, I do need bifocals. Walter John Chilson?
Well, I don't know about your needing bifocals, but I think, yes, Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley has indicated that there are going to be some questions raised about the appointment. Republicans are not strongly supporting him. Matter of fact, might be opposing him, and remains to be seen whether he can get the endorsement or not. I think with Democrats in control of the Senate, that his nomination will be approved, maybe with some controversies brought up, as John Smart has indicated. By the way, I want to, John, I want to say when you voted back in New York, you were smart.
Well, I
could point out, Walter John, that my mother was ready to separate me from the family because I said that.
We are going to take a short pause, and then we will be back continuing to talk about the news of the week. We have our Week in Review quiz coming up, and we'll get back to some state issues, a lot more state budget developments to discuss. And we, again, will be welcoming your input, too. We are talking with John Smart, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party, a regular contributor to Fighting Bob and newspapers around Wisconsin, and Walter John Chilson, a former Republican state senator from Wausau, a member of the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping that you will join us on Monday. It's going to be the first Monday of the month, so that means Mike Crane, the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, will be here talking with you about Wisconsin Public Radio. Mondays with Mike, this coming Monday between 8 and 9. Time now for our Week in Review quiz. There was a birthday this week that you don't hear about very often. Someone or something turned 165 years old on Wednesday. Who or what was it? And no, it was not John Smart or Walter John Chilson. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's our Week in Review quiz question. Someone or something turned 165 years old on Wednesday. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will give you 5 minutes to make your guess, to call in your answer. We will announce the answer and the quiz winner at the end of the show. And we will offer the quiz winner, a randomly selected winner, one of the books that we have featured on the program recently. So this is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Smart and Walter John Chilson. And we are dealing with the news of the week. Another national issue is that President Obama is going to host college students today at the White House as he calls on Congress to keep student loan rates from doubling in July. John Smart, how important do you think it is to get this deal done?
I think it's incredibly important. I've known too many young people who have ended up with enormous debt from being in college. And in fact, President Obama and his wife Michelle have talked about how long it took them both to pay off their college debts. And I just don't think that we approach this from a sensible standpoint. There's an article making the rounds on the internet about somebody from Denmark talking about how everything works there. And I have a personal story too. I used to work in Sweden, and there was a family that I got to know very well, and they had a son who had just graduated from high school, and I was talking to him about what was he going to do next. And he said, well, I've always wanted to be an artist, a commercial artist or a regular artist. And he said, I think I'm going to study that in college. But he said, I don't have to worry about it like you do in the United States. Like, if I go to college and study to be an artist, am I ever going to pay off my debt? Because he said the state will pay my college tuition and some of my expenses, and so I don't have to think about that. By the way, that young man is now a commercial artist working for a design firm in Stockholm, and he's doing very well indeed. But it seems to me that we're on the wrong track in the United States by loading up those college students with debt. And I know that it's a serious problem for a lot of students, and a lot of students have dropped out, and they have to plan their future careers around what is going to pay the most money so that they can pay off their debt. And I think that's a shame.
What do you think, Walter John Chilson? Should Congress keep student loan rates from doubling in July?
I don't think there's any question that they will keep them from doubling. President Obama has a plan, and the Republicans have a plan as well. I think the president has said he'll veto the Republican plan. I've forgotten the reasons why he objects to that, but it is a serious problem. John's right. I've got two granddaughters right now who I'm trying to talk into either going to law school or going back to school and getting master's degrees. And the main reason they don't want to do it is because they've already got considerable debt and they don't want to pile up more debt. I had a daughter recently when she was married some 20 years ago. I guess her husband didn't know that she had the huge, huge debt that he would have to assume, or they would have to assume. And they just recently celebrated it with a bottle of champagne and finally paying off her educational debt. I wish we could be doing more to encourage students to get further education. It's certainly one of the reasons why we lag behind China in special engineering and things like that, is because we don't have as many kids going to get those degrees, and it's mainly because they don't want to pile up more debt in staying in college longer.
I wanted to ask you, Walter John Chilson, about this whole issue with the Justice Department gathering AP reporters' phone records and emails of a Fox News journalist. This week, Attorney General Eric Holder wanted to hold meetings with news organizations over the Justice Department guidelines governing investigations that involve leaks and reporters. The Associated Press wanted the meeting to be on the record. The New York Times and the Huffington Post did not or won't attend because it's supposedly off the record. But what do you you're a former reporter. What do you make of the Justice Department's gathering of this information from journalists?
I think it was really grossly mishandled by Eric Holder personally. He denies having been at fault about it, but I think there's evidence that he may have even perjured himself in denying knowledge about it when the evidence shows that he did give signed approval for the investigation to be made on the Fox News journalist. I think Holder's in real trouble on this, I think. Sensenbrenner, Jim Sensenbrenner, congressman from the Milwaukee area, said he has great concerns about Holder's testimony before the Judiciary Committee, and he said it appears to be at odds with court documents that showed that he was directly involved in issuing a warrant for Fox News reporter James Rosen. Even Democrat Conyers on that committee said that he was deeply troubled by it, and Holder is now trying to make up with the news media and trying to hold an off-record meeting. I'm glad to see that some of the people, Associated Press and New York Times among them, refused to go. But the meeting was held. They did make there were some people who did attend, and they said that they were making some progress, and I think that's Holder's mea culpa in trying to make amends with the news media, because the news media, pretty obvious, have been very friendly with the Obama administration, to the point of a lot of people being criticizing them for showing such favoritism. I think it's Obama, by the way, might be a target in the midterm elections. I don't think that's a wise thing to do, but Paul Ryan says that now we're seeing the cronyism and the arrogance in practice in Obama's second terms. His likability is still at 80%, but only about half of the public approves of Obama's job performance. And I think a new poll by Quinnipiac University in Pennsylvania, I think it is, had him at 58% in 2011, but now at 49%. I think the IRS scandal is bothering voters the most. That's polls, again, indicate that. But I'm still upset mostly about Benghazi and Libya. People died there, and nobody died in Watergate.
Let me move on to get a reaction from John Smart. First on, is Eric Holder, the Attorney General, in trouble, this whole flap over this investigation?
I think there's a great deal more to be learned about all of this, and there are certain things that have to be considered state secrets, and if the secrecy is being broken somewhere along the line, then they have to find out about that, and that's the Attorney General's responsibility. But again, I don't think we really know enough to make any kind of determination about this. As far as I can see, Attorney General Holder has done an excellent job, and there are people who say he's one of the best AGs that we've had in years. So I don't know. At this point, we're still kind of holding off and waiting.
Let me go to.
I'm sorry,
Walter John Chilson. I mean, we have only less than 5 minutes to go, and we have we didn't get to all sorts of state budget stories that we need to get to.
I just want to predict he's going to resign.
Okay. All right. We'll hold you to that. Well, let's go to Dave in Appleton. Hi, Dave. I want you to bring us back to state issues.
Okay, back to state issues. I would like each person very succinctly to say, given that the budget process in the state of Wisconsin is basically a catch-all garbage pail for all sorts of legislation that should be legislation instead of shoved into the budget, I would like to know the top three items that are in the budget now that are good for job creation, 21st century job creation, to get to that 250,000 jobs. What does this budget have in there that is going to attract jobs to the state of Wisconsin? Top three off the top of the head that's in the budget.
Yeah, Dave, thanks very much. We don't have time for three. So, Walter John Chilson, is this state budget going to create jobs, help Wisconsin's economy that way?
No, only in a very general way. And I think the new proposal that's been made, and apparently the governor supports it, the proposal to cut taxes even further, will be something that can attract jobs.
John Smart?
I don't see anything in the budget that will do anything about attracting jobs, and the Joint Finance Committee seems to agree with me.
Yeah. Another state budget news item this week. Benefits paid to unemployed people in Wisconsin would be reduced by $37 million over the next 2 years. The Joint Finance Committee approved the changes Wednesday on a party line vote. It would make it harder to receive unemployment benefits by changing the rules regarding voluntary termination of work, misconduct, substantial fault, work search, instead of four applications a week. John Smart, how do you think this is going to affect people who are on unemployment?
Probably about the same way that their plan to increase or decrease voter registration is. They're trying to discourage people who are chronically unemployed, for instance, or who have physical incapacitation to just stay home. And if you don't get any unemployment or whatever, you can't really go out and become an active participant in the democracy of our state. I think it's all just all part of a plan.
Walter John Tilson?
Well, it would save some substantial money, and I think there would be a shortfall unless they do this, and would change that $10 million shortfall to a $15 million positive balance. I think there's no question that there are some people, whether they voluntarily terminated their work or there was some misconduct or substantial fault involved, and under those rules, they should not be getting unemployment comp. I think it's not wrong to try to tighten up the regulations.
I'm very briefly, you touched on it, Walter John, but are you in favor of this proposal by Republican State Representative Dale Kuyenga to more than double Governor Walker's tax cut?
Well, I'm in favor of tax cuts because I think tax cuts will attract business as opposed to what they're doing in Minnesota. They're raising taxes over there and in an effort to attract more businesses. I don't think that makes sense. I think what he's proposing, doubling the tax cut as proposed originally by Governor Walker, does make sense.
And very briefly, John Smart?
I don't think so at all. I think that basically every time that they cut the taxes on corporations or on wealthy people or whatever, it means that somebody is going to be hurt, whether it's our schools or our unemployment or whatever else, and I just don't like it.
All right, it's time now to congratulate Bill in Madison. He's the winner of our Week in Review quiz. Whose birthday did we celebrate on Wednesday? The state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin was admitted to statehood 165 years ago on Wednesday. The Badger State was officially admitted to the Union on May 29th, 1848, the 30th state to do so. So happy birthday to Wisconsin. So in just 10 seconds, Walter John Chilson, what's your favorite thing about Wisconsin?
My favorite thing about Wisconsin, I don't like the winters.
But you love the summers when they come.
And the winters makes us really appreciate the summers that much more.
Yeah.
So I guess the change of seasons.
Yeah, there's a good one. John Smart, 10 seconds. What do you love most about Wisconsin?
There's a whole lot of things, and I haven't got enough time to talk about it, but it's important for me to tell people that I spent my life traveling around the world and living in different places in the United States and spent 3 years in the Peace Corps.
And this is the best. I'm so sorry, John, 10 seconds. I'm Joy Cardine. Thank you very much for joining us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.